My guest at this time is former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Kerik. He held that post on 9/11, as you may remember, as well as the critical days, weeks, and months that followed. He was later nominated to be Secretary of Homeland Security in the administration of President George W. Bush. It turned out to be an ill-fated opportunity that eventually led to his imprisonment for tax fraud and making false statements. His three-plus years in prison helped him see the criminal justice system from the other side and turned him into a crusader for reforming the system. Mr. Kerik is the author of the new book, From Jailer to Jailed, My Journey from Correction and Police Commissioner to Inmate Number 84888-054. And Commissioner Kerik, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
A lot of different areas in which you would like to see changes in the criminal justice system. Let's start with the just treatment of inmates. You talk about how it's not just an obvious reduction in their rights, but just a basic stripping of even human dignity, the way they're treated not only by some corrections officers, but also by those who are supposed to help them. I remember reading one part of the book where there was a person at the facility in Maryland where she basically walked around. It was obvious she didn't like her job and couldn't care less about whether you and other inmates were being rehabilitated in any way. So how do you start to change that way that inmates are treated?
Well, I think most of that is training and accountability, first line supervision. I run two of the biggest law enforcement organizations in this country, being the NYPD, and prior to that, the New York City Department of Correction, which included Rikers Island, which at a time was considered the most violent jail or prison system in this country. When I took over in 1995, we had 133,000 annual admissions. We averaged at the time I took over 150 stabbings and slashings per month. When I left as police commissioner, we had one. And we created all kind of unparalleled efficiencies within the system over that six-year period. Training and accountability within the system is what makes the system right and makes it work and holds people accountable to the standards that are set by the agency, minimal standards, minimal correctional standards. And listen, don't get me wrong, for the most part, correctional officers all over this country that man the gates of our prisons and jails, they have a dangerous job, they have a stressful job, they are courageous in the work they do. They go into these units, many of these violent units, without weapons of any kind. And they do a job nobody else would do. But at the end of the day, there are a bunch of them that are out there. They believe it's their job to punish you mentally or physically. And that's illegal. And it goes against everything the system stands for.
And as you point out in the book, it could also endanger the person on the next shift or the person that replaces them if they retire or get transferred, correct?
That's right. And I think that's something that especially the newer correctional officers that go into these units and they get overly aggressive, they incite some of the inmates in the system. I think sometimes they don't think, you know, you're going to incite somebody and you're going to go home, you're going to take off. And while you're gone, that next CO is going to walk into a housing area and he's going to reap the upset that you created before you left. And I think they don't think about that sometimes.
We're talking with former New York City Police Department Commissioner Bernard Kerik. The book is From Jailer to Jailed. And, sir, another issue that you address in the book, and it's certainly from your time at the minimum security facility in Maryland, where there were many different people, nonviolent offenders, who ended up getting pretty severe sentences for things you don't think about. Some of them are white-collar crime. One was there just because he caught too many fish against various regulations. So how do you go about making sentences more realistic?
Well, I think overall, first of all, keep in mind where I was, you couldn't be in that facility if you had any violence in your background. So you had 300 men, 70% of which were there on many first-time low-level drug offenses. And then you had another classification of the white-collar crimes. As you just mentioned, there were commercial fishermen. I talk about one in my book, but there were several. Commercial fishermen that caught too many fish. A guy that sells a whale's tooth on eBay. Somebody enhances their income in a mortgage application and gets charged with mortgage fraud. plus the young low-level drug offenders. The reality is all of these people could have paid an alternative cost or price or punishment instead of being sent to prison. And we are committing that. Look, I'll be the first one to say I put a lot of people in prison. But they were bad guys, bad people that did really bad things. And they should be punished, and we have to keep society safe. But we're taking thousands upon thousands of nonviolent people, and we're sticking them in prison. We're turning them, many of these young guys, we're turning them into monsters. We're teaching them how to be real criminals. We're sucking all the societal values out of them, institutionalizing them, and then sending them home. And on the white-collar side, we take people that were in the workforce, paying taxes, taking care of their families. We criminalize them, and then they get out. They can't find a job. They can't go back to doing what they were doing. They can't work in any organization or company that's regulated by the government. We're creating a second class of American citizen that is diminished by about 70 or 80% in constitutional and civil rights and workability, and it's just bizarre. It's absurd.
Follow up on that, if you could, Commissioner Carrick, because that's obviously a big part of your book, too, is that instead of making prisoners ready to reenter society, the system currently stacks the deck against them as you see it. So what are some realistic ways that could be addressed so that they are ready to contribute to society again?
And you know what? What you just said is probably one of the most important things or issues of our time right now. We have all these people coming out of prison. This year, 45,000 people will leave federal prison system, and they'll go back into society. And I've got news for you. They go back into society as a second-class citizen for the remainder of their life. You know, the premise that you do your time, you pay for your punishment, you move on with your life, or you pay your debt to society, that's a falsehood. It's not reality at all. You never finish paying your debt to society. That conviction lasts with you until the day you die, and it has a collateral negative impact on you, your profession, and your family forever, eternally. And some people in Washington have not been smart enough to see this and see what it's doing to society. So that thing lingers with you, and it is destroying us, not to mention from a societal perspective, but from an economic perspective, we are losing billions of dollars a year in tax income and economic spending over the reported cost of incarceration. So there's this hidden cost that is far beyond the cost of incarceration that we are losing in our economy because of what we're doing. And I think it has to change. That is one of the most important issues. At some point, you pay your time, you do your punishment, you do your time. Well, those civil and constitutional rights that you've lost, they've got to be given back. And only in extreme cases, the most violent or violent suspects, violent people that committed murder and rape or pedophiles, if you want to keep them in that diminished capacity, I get it. But for the people we're locking up, 60% of the people we're locking up, we're destroying them personally, professionally, for the rest of the natural life.
Two quick questions, sir, before we let you go. There's been some rumblings both in Washington and sometimes on the state level about criminal justice reform. Are there any that you see as particularly credible and particularly doable?
Well, I think some of the things that Rand Paul, Cory Booker, Newt Gingrich have talked about, you know, the reductions in the mandatory minimums in the sentencing guidelines, alternatives, real programs within the system. Senators Cornyn and Whitehouse recently introduced a bill pertaining to that. There's a bunch of bills out there that are sort of floating around. It's time for there to be a real bipartisan effort to address this. And most importantly, going into the 2016 election, the next president of the United States, no matter what party they're from or who they are, this has to be, criminal justice reform must be one of the top five domestic issues on their plate. Because as it stands right now, the entire system's going to implode. We can't sustain it economically. So it's got to be fixed.
Last question. You've been very kind with your time, sir. This is more of a personal question. After going through this entire difficult ordeal, in addition to your passion now to reform the system, how do you believe your time in prison changed you the most?
I think it gives you a much better insight into how important your family is, especially your kids. You know, I said in the book, and you can read some of this, going to prison is like dying with your eyes open. You go into, you're placed in a circumstance where it's basically like you've died. You keep your eyes open and you watch your whole world go on within you, without you in it. Your kids grow. They go to school. They graduate from school. You have deaths in your family. Your life goes on, and all you can do is watch. And it's a horrifying, horrifying experience for you and your children. And I think most importantly for me, I realized that the deprivation of freedom is far more profound than you could ever imagine. And don't take it for granted.
Wow. Well, sir, we thank you very much for an honest explanation in the book and in our conversation today about your experience. And we'll certainly stay on top of the debate as it relates to criminal justice reform. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Former New York City Police Department Commissioner Bernard Kerik. He is the author of the brand new book, From Jailer to Jailed, My Journey from Correction and Police Commissioner to Inmate Number 84888-054. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.